Danilana Kitchen talks about food. Danilana Kitchen talks recipes. Danilana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Danilana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I am Donna Prisgintas.
We get together every week, Tuesday. We come to you from the KHOI studios, live, without a net. We'll talk about food, farming, and lots of other issues here. First, Donna is going to tell us about one of our underwriters.
Okay, Danilana Kitchen is underwritten by the wonderful people at Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocer in Ames, community-owned, community-focused since 1974, open daily 7 a.m., 9 to 9 p.m., located downtown Ames at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street. Everyone can shop at Wheatsfield Co-op, and we do.
That's it, yes. Today, we're going to consider potluck, eating with lots of other people. That's a good Iowa tradition, something we can be proud of. But first, a few items from the Danilana Kitchen news desk.
We want you to all know that Hello Kitty takes to organic farming.
This is Hello Kitty as in the insufferably cute little
Absolutely. And furthermore, this news item is from the Midwest Sustainable and Organic Educational Service. So they are telling us that Hello Kitty takes to organic farming. Hello Kitty is now an organic farmer with their own wildly successful 50,000 square foot farm in Hong Kong. They have land restrictions there, you know. Raymond Ching started the farm out of concern for health issues and food safety in Hong Kong and China, and now uses it as a way to teach people about organic farming. The company that owns Hello Kitty was initially reluctant to participate, but the farm is so successful that they're considering opening another theme park-like farm in China as a, quote, Hello Kitty land combined with organic farming. Now, that's a culture item.
Anything that can get people to talk about good food. Hello, Kitty. Somehow, it,
hello? Hello, Lana. Hello, Kitty. There we go.
Good luck to them all. That's wonderful. And I have, from our news desk, a movie review. Last night, I went to a movie at the Ames Public Library.
At our beautiful new public facility.
Yes. And it's called Pay to Play. Pay, the number two, play. Democracy's High Stakes, a very well-done movie. Sometimes when I go to movies at the library, I feel like, oh, no, I'm going to learn something.
This is educational.
This is educational. This is going to be, if nothing else, depressing because there's a lot of problems in the world. This movie does a wonderful job of addressing the subject of big money in politics.
What is this, dark comedy?
Not really a dark. Well, it's dark, but it the problems are dark, but you end up with a very positive way to end this whole thing.
Uplifting, good.
Uplifting,
we need that.
Good. And this is supported by a whole lot of people that across the political spectrum who are concerned about big money in politics. There's all kinds of experts talking about it. There's great graphics. There's good humor. Pictures of dogs and kitties and things and babies. Babies are in this because, of course, they're our future. And the game Monopoly is featured very nicely. So it's lovely to watch, lovely information. They actually end up giving us things we can do at the end of it. So you don't end up just kind of slinking out of the movie theater thinking that you're pretty small while everyone else is pretty big because everybody together is pretty big. They suggest six things that come out of this movie. Public financing for campaigns. Contribution disclosure laws. Compulsory voting, like jury duty.
I like that one.
We can do that.
Excellent.
It's like sending in your water bill. Just vote.
Yeah.
If you want to complain, you should vote. Okay, number four, fight partisan redistricting. We don't have too much trouble with that in Iowa because of some certain laws. We discussed that last night. But in some states, gerrymandering can be pretty nasty. Another good suggestion, free airtime for candidates. After all, the airwaves, like what is going through your ears right now, belong to all of us. So free airtime. And number six, a constitutional amendment. Money does not equal speech, and corporations are not people. So there's some things to think about, some things to chew on around your kitchen table. And here is another news item. I read via the Internet, all this stuff kind of pops up, and I found this on Common Dreams, a news service. Groups related to the Koch brothers are planning to spend $1 billion of Koch brother money in the next election cycle. They're announcing that now, so it must be
$1 billion.
Now, $1 billion is an awful large number. That's lots of money.
Why don't they use that to take care of poor women and children or something fruitful?
$1 billion for Ken. I'm thinking of running myself just so I can get my hand on some of that money.
Oh, Lana, I'll be your campaign finance manager.
Anyway,
how about that?
That's the kind of thing this pay-to-play movie is about. It's time we start talking about that sort of thing because it's hard to get our minds around big numbers. Lots of zeros there. So as we consider large numbers, the topic for today on the Donna Lana Kitchen is cooking for crowd.
Oh, Lana, I thought you were going to announce you're going to throw your hat in the ring for the presidential campaign.
I'm going to build up the suspense.
Okay. You and Hillary.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, if I have to choose to vote, I would vote for Lana.
Well, all right. Thank you. All right. Anyway.
Well, that would be refreshing, wouldn't it, in politics? Good heavens.
So we're going to consider the potluck today. If you grew up in the Midwest, you're probably pretty familiar with the potluck. The casserole, the three-bean salad, the favorite chocolate cake recipe.
Used to be Jell-O.
Yeah, well, that's okay, too.
Oh, yeah.
We
cream
all
corn.
Try to bring our best when we gather at the potluck dinner. Even if you're a hunter-gatherer and just snag a bag of corn chips from the grocery store, the potluck brings out something in all of us. It's often more just than the sum of its parts. Potlucks need a little bit of planning and a little bit of thought, though. Donna, talk about what happened this weekend.
Oh, well, Practical Farmers of Iowa had their annual conference, and it's growing and growing and growing. I don't know how big it was this year, but probably in the 600 or something. I haven't gotten the numbers yet. But so it happens at the Scheman Center, but then Friday night, actually, right after the performance of Map of My Kingdom, it was like dinner theater, everybody came over to the CPMI? It's out on Airport Road. Anyway, it's a venue, and everybody showed up for the potluck.
Big potluck.
Karaoke and the,
So
it was a grand affair.
There was a great opening bit of music to this, as everybody was bringing
live
in their stuff.
Music.
And bringing in their potluck things. A man was playing a musical saw. A musical saw, what could be better than at a gathering of farmers? There was a man sitting there in the corner with his friend on a guitar, and he was playing the Iowa Waltz. The PFI opening potluck. Teresa, who are we listening to? Who are these folks?
Steve McGrew and John Bakehouse, and they're both farmers from Southwest Iowa.
I was talking to Teresa Opheim. She's
the executive director of Practical Farmers of Iowa.
And she was telling us that Steve McGrew and John Bakehouse were the opening music for the potluck.
And the saw was quite a sweet little thing. He makes his own. Lana, tell me what you know. It didn't have teeth on it, you know?
I assume that one could just play a regular saw, although I'm sure it like a Stradivarius violin, you probably need a certain kind of saw. But the kind of saws that people play don't have teeth on them, so you can't cut things with them because you have to draw a bow along the edge of the saw, and the saw is bent.
I mean, it does make sense. But.
Yes, yes. And so I've always thought they're quite unwieldy, but anybody that can get the Iowa waltz out of a saw is pretty good.
I guess he had long arms.
He did have long arms.
Or since he made it himself, he probably sized it to fit him. Clever fellow.
Anyway.
It was very cute and kind of sweet. I liked it.
So, because everybody was hungry and thinking about eating, I took a tour of the food tables. And there was a lot of stuff to see there.
We're here at Practical Farmers of Iowa. They're having a potluck. You wouldn't believe this potluck. Farmers know how to cook. They all brought their best. Heading down the appetizer table, starting out with some hard-boiled eggs, some homemade salsa, some deviled egg, some bread, and some hummus. There's soy milk over there on the other side, and a vegetable kebab with some yogurt. That looks homemade yogurt there to go on it. We've got a little table of beef heart here, some homemade pork spread to go on some homemade dark, dark, dark bread, cheese curds from Milton Creamery. I love the things on the table that say caution, extremely spicy. Basil, sun-dried tomatoes. I get a thumbs up here for the horseradish chèvre. Oh, horseradish chèvre. Describe that taste, sir.
It's sweet and tart, and it has a little bit of a tingly bite with the horseradish.
Salsa and some nut bread. Pickles. We've got some sweet pickles. We've got some dill pickles. Garlic scape pickles, two kinds of garlic scape pickles, sausage, eight kinds of sausage, cheese, chips, and homemade aronia berry and aronia berry apple jam, some spelt pretzels to dip into everything, a corn salsa homemade, and some nectarines there on the end. Carrots, cauliflower, and some homemade pesto. More bread. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 6 kinds of cheese in one plate here. Some Amana cheese curd. A bread and lettuce salad. Some blue cheese. Oh, blue cheese with some crackers. Oh, yes, the pork spread and the horseradish chèvre on top of the beef heart. Let's try that.
I brought a kale sweet potato casserole, like enchilada casserole thing. Favorite, probably brownies because I suck at making them.
This is an informal poll.
So did you bring a potluck dish?
I brought liquid Lutheran Kool-Aid. Beer, you know, so
that'll do it.
The essential.
All right, that was a short tour of the appetizer table. I'm sure you've been at potlucks like that. It's just so fun to talk to people over what they've brought because they all bring their best. The beef heart was a lovely thing.
That was a rather astonishing thing. I personally like all kinds of organ meats and things like that, and this beef heart. It must have been, I didn't talk to the person who made it, but by tasting it, it tasted like it had been boiled and or simmered or even marinated in, it had a distinctive cumin infusion in it and also slightly vinegared. So, and it was served just cut in little tiny, like half inch squares that you pop in your mouth. With beef heart, you know, you have to cook it until it gets kind of soft and not terribly chewy. But whoever prepared this was able to get some nice flavor into it. It was the best beef heart I've ever tasted. Beef heart.
Beef heart. Yeah. Thank you, Donna. Thank
yes.
you. And it was served very nicely. Each one's in a separate little separate little plastic cup, so you didn't have to get your fingers in it. It was an accessible appetizer. Very
absolutely
nice.
It was
another
delicious.
Another nice thing. We ran into the owner and the cheesemaker of a company called Doughs and Divas,
Western Iowa.
Yeah, from a place called Honey Creek, Iowa. I'm not quite sure where that is, but she was the one that had the different cheese spreads there and the horseradish.
Yeah, the horseradish one had some dried cherries in it, so that's what gave you the sweet, mm-hmm. and then the little hot, mm-hmm. and then the tang of the goat cheese.
And there was
delicious.
Basil, yes. Mm-hmm. And Donna tried one that kind of set her back a little bit, and that was the one that had the caution by it. There was a caution by the...
I think she put habanero in. I mean, I can do spicy, but this one was like... The steam started coming out of my ears.
I saw Donna actually taken aback at the spices. Oh, I looked at the ingredients. It was not just habanero. It said ghost pepper.
Oh, that's right. That's what she told me. That's the hottest of the hottest.
It was wonderful, but be very cautious.
It was the challenge of the table. You always get things like that. You know, some trickster slips it in and then poor unsuspecting people like me, even though it says caution... I'll have a taste of that.
Have you ever followed the word caution? No, she just dives right in.
Well, there's hot and then there's hot.
This was hot. So that was Doughs and Divas
cheese. And their cheeses, I love their cheeses. They, you can buy them at Wheatsfield and maybe other places around town. I don't know. But they have their own goats and sheep. And so the cheeses themselves are variously mixed between goat and sheep. And she only does the fresh cheeses, the soft ones. But that mixture of the sheep in with the goat is nice. It gives it a firmer texture and a slightly different kind of flavor profile than the usual goat's cheese. So yeah. I love their product.
Yeah. We hope to explore goat cheese, goats, and maybe even visit the farm.
Yeah, we may take you with us to visit them when the weather
is nice.
That
sounds like a wonderful place to visit. Another nice thing along with the appetizer table was the drinks table.
The home
brew bar. And if you think good farmers can make good potluck things, they can also brew some good things. Or, like I said, they can hunter and gatherer some nice things. There's lots of good Iowa beer.
I do believe we have a home brewing tradition very quietly in Iowa that's continued for a good long period of time. Of course, there were lots of good beers there, and some not good beers, too, of course. And then, you know, everybody knows about Templeton Rye and the whole story and the marketing ploy that goes with it. And apparently, most of Templeton Rye is actually not made in Iowa.
Right, right.
However, we do have two very good distilleries in Iowa, and one of them is Cedar Ridge. I think it's in Cedar Rapids. And they make whiskeys, bourbons... actually, a full line of distillery things. And then there's the Mississippi Brewing Company, which is over, I think it's just north of the Quad Cities somewhere. And they actually use all Iowa grains in their distilling process. And they have a full line of things.
That's something to celebrate.
Vodkas, gins, and then, of course, they've got some good whiskeys and some reserve whiskeys and some bourbons. And so some of those things were on the bar. Part of the crowd is a drinking crowd. And then there are some home brews. There's a young man, Troy Benjergides, and I may not be saying that right, who every year for the last 5 years has brought his home brew, at least 5 years. And I've been tasting it regularly. And he makes a sorghum. I think he uses sorghum home brew. And this year he brought something that was clear, like white lightning, and it was in a jar, and in the jar was some, I believe, honeydew melon or something that had been soaked in it. But I always take a taste of whatever he brings because it's homemade and I want to see what's going on. And this one was the smoothest ever. And I said, Troy, what did you do? He said, I've aged it for more than a year. And he's a young man reaching into not a teenager anymore, and I think his patience in brewing is growing, and it was actually quite delicious. So, shout out for homebrew.
Good. What a nice thing to bring to a potluck.
Yeah, and I went to a potluck, too, at Luke and Sally Grant's last week, or a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. and Luke had made a home-brewed pear cider. And he even had it in a container where he'd pressured it with CO2, and it was bubbly in the glass. Delicious, delicious.
Local brewing of stuff is a great way to add value and enjoyment to what we do. Huh? I talked to Kamyar N. Cheyenne, who is a wonderful local foods advocate and sustainable farming advocate from eastern Iowa, from the Cedar Rapids area. He's been at this
a
long time.
He's at UNI, yeah.
Yeah, UNI. And he mentioned, he was talking to me and said, remember about 20 years ago, we were kind of meeting to do this kind of stuff, and we were just thinking we were talking pie in the sky because we just said, well, wouldn't it be nice if someday we could actually drink some beers that were made in Iowa? Who would think 20 years later we actually can? So back 20
progress,
years ago.
Progress. That's progress,
back,
I say.
Back years
don't
ago.
You think so?
Yeah. Good, good. So that was a crowd. There were about, 350, 400 people at that potluck.
And
if you think a potluck is daunting, well, you have to think about it that way because that potluck worked just fine.
A good time was had by all.
Yeah.
I hope. Lana and I were the hostesses.
Oh, yes. They needed a host. Well, somebody, I kind of stood by the door and pointed to where things went. But Donna, she cooked and took care of the food because in this situation, you mentioned that a potluck isn't just a potluck. You have to kind of take into consideration what they expect and what they want. So things were provided.
Well, you can do the plain old potluck where you take your chances, and who knows what you're going to get. You could get 10 apple pies. Now, that wouldn't be so bad, actually. But my assumptions for this event, and this is the third year I've done it, is that, people will bring lots of salads and desserts, and we've set it up with PFI is providing a meat and a starch. So these last couple of years, Nyman Ranch and our favorite Nyman Ranch farmer, Paul Willis, has been donating the bratwurst, which we, cook up and provide. And then also this year we did a huge batch of Earl Hafner's early morning harvest polenta. So that was a big starch and then some meat. And so everyone knew that that was kind of going to be the center, and then they would just bring things to work around it.
Yes. I want to mention a little bit about the polenta. This was I can cook for a couple folks, but this was a whole lot of polenta. When I looked at the
50-pound bag,
bag of polenta, and when that got into being polenta, there was a huge, huge pot of it, and I was thinking, now what would I make in that quantity? And I thought, well, I've made that much of cement at a time in a wheelbarrow. I was thinking, yeah, if
well,
I
there
can
is
lift
a point in the cooking process where you think, oh, this is like cement. Is it going to make it in time?
It was much better than that.
Yeah, because it has butter in it. You put butter and garlic and cement, tastes great.
But three cheers for Donna for being able to think big. Think big. You're listening to KHOI, Heart of Iowa Community Radio. Support this station. Be a member and listen to this station. Because we get by with your donations, your good support, and your energy.
we're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking about cooking for a crowd. We were talking about making a rather substantial amount of polenta, which was delicious, that went with the delicious bratwurst that we had at a recent potluck, and the, besides everything else there, there were about, 350 farmers or so, and they all brought their best, and people at the PFI conference. So, tell me a little bit more about how you cook so much polenta all at once, Donna.
Well, the menu for the evening for the potluck was centered around us providing the polenta as a starch and the bratwurst as a meat, and then we also did quite a big bit of green salad and dressing. So the kitchen at this, what's it called?
CPMI. Convention Center.
Yeah, it's a public venue that you can just rent out. It has a sort of kitchen in it that one of the reasons I like this venue is that it has a tilt skillet, which is it's a big piece of commercial equipment. So that imagine a pan that's probably 2.5 feet by 3 feet or 4 feet. It's big, and it has the flame right under it, and it's called a tilt skillet because you can crank it up or down. So you can pour things out of it. For example, if you make soup in it, or you can, and the water for it is just right. It's on a hose that goes right into the skillet. So it's like having a gigantic, thick-bottomed pan, basically. So how we did this event was we actually browned the bratwursts were, pre-cooked. So we opened packages. I think I had dreams of opening packages of bratwursts. So it was 300 or 400 bratwursts, and we kind of browned them. And then I had the help of these lovely 6 girls from the Food Corps. Now, the Food Corps is kind of like Vista volunteers. It's young people that sign up to work in food projects. It's a nonprofit organization, and they're given some, fairly minimal stipend for a year of work. And they go around some of these girls are working in the Des Moines school system and various places around the state. And it was founded by a young man named Kurt Ells, who was one of the producers of King Corn. So he spent a lot of time in Iowa looking at food systems, and he came up with, after they had done the film, I think he's entrepreneurial, and he decided the next thing that we needed all over this country was more food education. And so we had 6 girls working in the kitchen and helping me brand the bratwurst, and they were so cute. We held them warm. We had 6 turkey roasting oven pans, So after we browned the bratwurst in the tilt skillet, we lined them up, and they had them all perfectly lined up in 3 big piles.
The presentation was beautiful.
Yeah, it was very cute. And so then after we did the bratwurst, then, you just squirt the water in, and you scrub the skillet out, and then you pour it out. It's really cute to clean it up like that. And they were thrilled. They'd never used a tilt skillet before.
Yeah, you may run across something like that. If you do a potluck in your home, that's one thing. But some potlucks, family gatherings, reunions, end up in a church basement or end up in a school cafeteria. And there's some amazing things.
The school cafeteria might have more commercial equipment. It's nice.
Yeah, it is. It is. And are there considerations for, does a recipe just plain scale up?
Not all recipes do. And sometimes if I didn't have the tilt skillet, I probably would have lined up 6 more turkey roasters and plugged them in and maybe blown some fuses in the place. You can cook polenta in turkey roasters, as we have done before, but at that scale, 50 pounds is pretty large. So I was thrilled to have the tilt skillet because, although we did have to keep scraping with wooden spoons the whole time, and you control the heat really carefully, it can scorch on the bottom, but because there's such a large cooking surface and those pans are thick-bottomed, because when you do large quantities of gloppy things, the weight of the product itself will make it start to burn more easily on the bottom.
Hence my previous allusion to the fact it looked like it was cement because it was massive. You think about the weight of food when it cooks, and heat has to go through that sort of thing.
Right. We had three gorgeous, cute, darling, wonderful girls in their early 20s stirring the whole time while the polenta, and in it we had put the butter. You want plenty of oil, so there was oil and butter to keep it from, well, to make it taste good, but also to help it from sticking on the bottom, and garlic and spices and but that's how we cooked it. And I just kept adding water as we went along to get it to its perfect gloppy consistency. Oh, and the other fun thing, then after that, we also had a salad to mix. And it was, oh, my goodness, it was probably 25 gallons maybe of green leaf lettuce, fresh.
We're talking a large quantity.
Lee's Greens.
From Lee's Greens. And to have fresh greens out of a greenhouse. It was fantastic.
Yeah, so I mixed up the salad dressing. I used a combination of sherry vinegar, balsamic vinegar, olive oil, salt, pepper, and garlic powder. Oh, and some dried basil, too. And then we took a big freezer chest and mixed it in batches. You know, I said to one of the girls, okay, wash your hands really well, take off all your rings and bracelets, roll up your sleeve, because you are going in and doing the turning, you know, mm-hmm. because you can't just, you don't want to beat the lettuce to death. You really have to fluff it into the salad dressing. So that's how we mixed up huge amounts of salad dressing.
Ooh, and it was good, too. Here's another little audio journey through the potluck kitchen.
This is what it sounds like when 400 farmers get together for a potluck. We're here at the Practical Farmers of Iowa. Opening night potluck for the Practical Farmers Conference here in Ames, Iowa. I'm here in the main kitchen room. Everyone's loading up on brats from Nyman Ranch, homemade polenta made by Donna Prisgintas. We've got salads. We've got salads up the kazoo here. We've got baked beans. We've got potato salad. We've got macaroni salad. There's a rice salad. There's 1, 2, 3 pizza-looking sort of things. There's some homemade sauerkraut back over there. We've got huge bowls of greens, fresh greens from Lee's Greenhouse. Now I'm moving over to the dessert table.
This says Farbreton.
Oh, good.
And this one says pumpkin crisp.
Oh, yum.
And that looks like a cherry cobbler.
Brownies. I see brownies coming up. And there's something that has many layers, but looks like cherry something on top of a cake something. We're doing good here this evening, yes.
That looks delicious.
Apple crisp. Super dark, dark brownies. Oh, some sort of crepes with something pink on the inside. And something chocolate on the outside. Sugar cookies, chocolate chip cookies, a pumpkin pie, an apple pie, a strawberry pie, a cream pie. Oh, and a huge, huge Rice Krispie treat in the shape of a pig. We are at the PFI Potluck, Practical Farmers of Iowa. They know how to eat. Welcome back. You're listening to KHOI, the Donna Lana Kitchen Show. Support this radio station. Go to khoifm.org and do press the donate button. And also visit the Donna Lana Kitchen webpage. All sorts of fun stuff there.
I have to say, those crepes that you mentioned in the...
Yeah.
They were filled with some kind of cream, but the strawberries, it was from Angela Tedesco's strawberries, and they tasted like fresh out of the garden. I'm sure she just pops them right into the freezer and brings them out. It was delicious.
Isn't that something, how you can kind of recognize somebody?
Yeah, by their strawberries.
Yeah. That's her strawberries.
Those are Angela Tedesco's strawberries.
That's good. What's your favorite thing to take to a potluck?
I usually tend to take some kind of meaty, soupy, you know, crock potty kind of thing that has, like something I made last night. It wasn't for a potluck, but it's typical. I took some pork ham hocks, basically, and, you know, cooked them for a long time. And then I threw in some, you know, that black rice that you can buy at the co-op.
Is it wild rice or just black in general?
No, it's black. It's
you're kidding.
Emperor's Forbidden Rice, it's called.
Forbidden Rice?
Yeah, it's very dark, beautiful, unusual variety that was, I think it's called Forbidden Rice because it, in you know, hundreds of years ago, it was a special rice that only the emperor could eat. But it colors the whole pot this sort of mahogany kind of winey color. And so I just threw in that and cooked the rice and cooked the ham hocks. And then if I were going to go to a potluck, I would probably throw in something colorful like either carrots or sweet potatoes. Of course, it had onions and garlic and then maybe some kale so that I know from potluck history that, you know, as long as you have a base for the meal, everybody gets a little meat and a little starch and something warm, and then everything else is just for fun. So I usually try to take something like that. First of all, it's easy to make.
Good.
You know, you just throw it in the crock pot. Then you take the crock pot to the party, and that's it.
Right. I do have a word of warning. This is potluck. Potluck safety here, if I want to say.
Oh, yeah.
Be careful. When you take soup, when you take crock pots and things, be sure to secure them in your car. I have had a quick stop end up with my crock pot stuff all over the back seat. So be careful. Really, that stuff is heavy. It sloshes around.
Not only do you lose your food that way, but then your car has this degrading process going on for months,
right?
On the carpet or the seat, or
it's especially bad. Actually, my husband Joe was in a rather minor car accident. Well, it wasn't so minor because we decided to sell the vehicle afterwards. But that one included borscht, and borscht ended up all on the inside of the truck cab, and things like that happen.
It's like tie-dye, wasn't it?
No, be careful out there. Be careful. So when you're packing for a potluck, keep yourself a nice pie basket or a picnic basket.
You also need to know that cooked things, like if I were taking the crock pot, here's just a general rule of thumb from hazardous safety analysis program or something like that. Things, once they reach room temperature, that means once they've either gotten unchilled or they've gotten unhot, once they reach room temperature, you have only a four-hour window because that's the where the bacterial contamination starts to grow. So if it's sitting at – and most events don't last longer than that. But once it reaches room temperature, you really only have a four-hour window where it is safe to eat.
Oh, that's good to know. 4 hours is a good time to have a potluck.
Right. So either if it stays hot, you know, in the crock pot, or if it's chilled and then brought out, you're fine.
Ah, good. Well, my favorite thing to take to a potluck of late has been pickles. I've kind of gone on a pickle-making craze in the summer, and nothing is better than to get ready for a potluck in the winter and be able to grab a few jars and go.
And I have to say, Lana's pickles were very cute. She used her garlic-scape pickles.
Yeah, we talked about the garlic-scape pickles this summer.
So
and
they're
worked,
little, they're
folks.
In
they
circles,
worked.
You know?
They worked. Yeah,
and they're adorable.
And we found out they were actually much better now in midwinter than after we first tasted them.
Right.
We sort of were kind about the description and said, oh, they're okay. But once
they have to sit for a while, I think. And Lana did two versions. She did the raw in the vinegar version, and she also did pouring hot vinegar over them.
Right. And one set had hot pepper flakes hot peppers from my garden and dill. And the other one was dill and lavender. And I wouldn't have thought lavender, but I think I got that recipe from you, Donna. And lavender and dill make a fine little pickle.
That those are the fresh vinegar ones. So I have a jar of those in my refrigerator, too. And after tasting Lana's, I think it might be time to bust mine out. I think they might be finally ready. But that's like 6 months almost.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what it said on the internet when I got the – so don't believe everything. Give it a try and taste them
as you go
along.
And be patient.
We'll listen to another tune here from the French-Canadian band Rasé Desmarais. That means tidal wave. ¶¶
was the band Rasé de Marée. It translates roughly to tidal wave. A French-Canadian band. And I played that music because this weekend, besides eating great food in great quantities with great bunches of people, also I went to a Central Iowa barn dance. And that's a...
And Lana is the caller this week.
I had the great pleasure of sitting... being on the stage with the band and watching a room full of people enjoying themselves. The barn dances happen once a month, and people just come, and we teach them what to do. We have a good time. There's always live music. And I picked the French-Canadian music because there was some good French-Canadian tunes that were played by the Barn Owl Band. Roger and his accordion do fine, fine things with French-Canadian dance music, and that was nice. Also, the fiddler and the mandolin player were really hot, too. It was a fun dance to call. It was a fun dance to dance. Barn dancing and any kind of dancing is kind of similar to a potluck. We all bring our best to the event. And I found just in my years of calling dances and dancing and being part of this community and watching people dance, I find dancing brings out the best in a lot of us and teaches us things about ourselves that maybe we aren't quite aware of. I've got a poem here by a poet named C.K. Williams. It's called The Dance, and it's about a woman dancing. The Dance by C.K. Williams. A middle-aged woman, quite plain, to be polite about it, and somewhat stout, to be more courteous still, but when she and the rather good-looking, much younger man she's with get up to dance, her forearm descends with such delicate lightness, such restrained but confident ardor athwart his shoulder, drawing him to her with such a firm, compelling warmth and moving him with effortless grace into the union she's instantly established with the not at all rhythmically solid music in that second-rate cafe, that something in the rest of us, some doubt about ourselves, some sad conjecture seems to be allayed. Nothing that we'd ever thought of as a real lack, nothing not to be admired or be repented for, but something to which we've never adequately given credence, which might have consoling implications about how we misbelieve ourselves and so the world beyond us, which so often disappoints, but which sometimes shows us, lovely, what we are. Dancing can do that. Moving around, dancing to the music, dancing with our neighbors. It's a fine, fine thing. So, we're still in the throes of winter, although we have been enjoying some warmer winter weather.
It's just gorgeous out today, and then you read the news of what's supposed to be happening on the East Coast, and happening or not, whatever. But here we are in sunny Iowa.
For now.
Yeah, it's only January, folks. We'll see.
Winter does come and go. I was going to consider a little bit about the cure for the common cold. There's lots of things that come out of a kitchen that can make us feel better and help us get over those winter ailments that hit us every now and then. I've got a cold remedy that I got from a doctor friend of mine who teaches me a lot about Oriental medicine, Chinese medicine. They come at understanding the body a little differently than Western medicine, but she gives me this thing to do, and it really does help. It looks silly, but it helps. And you probably have a version of it. Make a very strong tea out of garlic, ginger, and lots of lemon. Sip on that copiously while you are sitting comfortably in a chair with your feet in a very large foot bath basin or a pail or something, and get your feet very, very warm with as hot as you can stand it water, but make sure that the water is up over your ankles.
somehow that's where you're...
I'm trying to envision a container large enough to do that.
A big wash. I've got stuff from
big wash
for farmers market that I use. Big pans, big dish pans.
I'm envisioning using the thing we mix the salad in.
That's it. You could use that. An ice chest might work just fine to keep that warm. But it's important to get that hot water kind of up on your legs. And you're silly sitting there. And you're sitting there with an extra blanket. And your nose is probably running at this time. Stay there as long as you can. Have a friend refresh that hot water. Have a friend refresh your tea or have it close.
Get some service out of this.
Yes.
Do it in front of the wood stove.
And if you can apply a warm cap, that's even better. But that but that idea of extreme warm, getting your core
sweat
body
it out,
warm,
right.
Core body temperature up, and garlic, ginger, lemon. I think those combinations have been used quite a bit.
I used to have a rule in my household when any of the kids, anybody came home with the snuffles, we'd immediately take a full clove of garlic per person, chop it up into little small enough bits that you could swallow it whole, you know, without, because if I put raw garlic in my mouth and start chomping on it, it's like kind of the yuck revulsion thing. But if I cut it up small enough, put it on a spoon, and then everybody, sick or not, had to take it. This was a preventative measure. Plus, if you eat that much garlic and you're the only one, you will be the outcast of the household. So everybody eats it, and then no one minds it. And that was that saying, garlic is better than a 100 mothers or something like that. It's a really old, it's very good for you.
That seems a stretch, but the sentiment is good.
Fresh raw garlic, it is.
Fresh raw garlic.
Fresh raw garlic.
Yeah.
Is good. Also, there's the old cayenne pepper treatment. Do you know that one?
No, I don't do the cayenne pepper.
Oh,
what you got?
Oh, it's a wild one. You take a big 8-ounce cup or something, and you put hot water in it and a lot, like a teaspoon of cayenne pepper and a little bit of apple cider vinegar. Mix it up, and you drink it really fast.
I would think
really
one should,
fast.
Yes.
And it goes, there is that moment where you kind of go, ooh, and then it just like settles right down. And I don't know, it must be like sweating your innards out. Now, that's only for cayenne pepper.
Oh.
No jalapenos, none of those. Only cayenne because, and this is from that old Jethro Kloss book. What was that? One of the old herbal books that was, we were using it in the 60s, but he's a big proponent of cayenne, and apparently cayenne pepper has a lot of healing qualities. Like, for example, he used to say if you had a cut, you could actually put cayenne pepper on it and it would heal. Now, that's not true for black pepper or any other kinds of peppers, only cayenne. So cayenne, garlic, lemon and ginger. How about a hot toddy?
Oh, being warm. Yes, being warm. Actually, as a child, I even got, if you were going to be put to bed with usually being slathered in Vicks. Vicks was big in my house.
Oh, me too.
But getting a little shot of brandy or a little warm bit of brandy.
Whiskey.
And anything to help you sleep. And that stuff is in your kitchen, too. There you go.
Well, it's good, especially if you're coughing and you can't. I mean, obviously, sleeping is the best part of healing.
Yeah.
And if you can't get to sleep and you need a little help, probably a good idea.
That's
in moderation.
Good. That's good. And also, another thing you might find in your kitchen before going to the drugstore, I mean, you can get things like all kinds of cold remedies in the drugstore. Consider, for a sore throat, gargle with salt. That works fine.
Yeah.
Hot water.
And then follow with a spoon of honey. Or ginger and honey.
That'll do it. That'll do it. There's healthy things that we can do for ourselves when we're feeling down, and a lot of it has to do with slowing down. So do that too.
Sleep. And this is kind of I think part of the healing process is when you take control of it and make your own medicine, you really do feel not so overwhelmed. Oh, there's something I can do about this. I'm going to eat my raw garlic and put my the other thing I love to do, if you have the snuffles in your nose and you're congested, this is not doing your feet, but you heat up a pot of water to the boiling point or less, but anyway, the point is that you then drop a few drops of eucalyptus oil, and then you set it on the table in front of you with a trivet or something under it, and you take a big towel and kind of blanket your head and stick your nose down into that steam and just breathe and breathe. And, you know, when it gets too hot, you lift the towel up a little and let some of the heat out, and then you go back in. And I even do things like, you know, close one nostril and take in the heat as far as I can in that one, and then do the other one. And, you know, you get that heat inside those inflamed sinus cavities as far as you can, and it really does help.
Yes. So let's take control of our colds out there, folks, and share some garlic around. There's some things coming up. Next week, Donna is giving a class at Wheatsville Grocery, a cooking class. So
yeah, Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. The classes are free. You do have to sign up. There's, I think, limited to 40 people or something. And I am doing what I'm going to call it stone soup class. And, of course, they like to give out recipes there, and I'm decidedly anti-recipe. So I try to talk technique and encourage you to make your own recipes. So I'm really going to be talking about stocks and, you know, how to throw together a soup, whether it's, you know, making your own beef broth and then moving on from there, or mushroom broth. Probably we'll touch on miso and some vegetarian options.
And we might
chicken feet. Oh, yes. Lana's doing a chicken foot motion to him. I'm going, oh, right. We're going to put chicken feet in the chicken stock. So if you want to be there for the real thing, that's Tuesday night, a week from tonight, at Wheatsville.
Good. And if you're looking for more information on that pay-to-play movie, you can go to pay2play.tv to find out more about that. There's a Farmers Union Lobby Day coming up on February 3rd, and information on that you can go to email Debbie Bunka, dbunka at iowafarmersunion.org. We'll go out with some more French-Canadian music here. There's all kinds of good stuff going on. There's also February 7th, Democracy for the Common Good is an organization connected with the American Friends Service Committee, and that's in Des Moines. That's happening February 7th. So you've been listening to the Donna Lund Kitchen with Lana Nachtigal.
And Donna Prisgintas.
Engineering by Rick. Eat good food and enjoy life.